We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from an advertisement in the Wrexham Daily Post, read for us by Charlotte Green.
We're committed to offering equality of opportunity to all, and particularly welcome applications from people.
Thanks to Karen Lloyd-Jones of Wrexham for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Joanna Coles. And on my left, Alan Corran, and making a first appearance on the news quiz, Joe Brand. Jeremy, who gave right answers off the cuff out of the blue?
Would this be something to do with the Conservative Party conference, I'm guessing? Yes. They've been having a bit of a conference, the Conservatives, and it's gone very well, and they're very pleased and very happy, and they've been able to forget for a few days that everybody else in the country hates them. And the set piece, the big show, was Major and Winnie stripping off, because there's a competition now to see who can get the most naked before the election. Seemingly Blair started the shirt sleeves thing, and now Major's doing it. Brian Mulroney went so far as to start to roll his sleeves up a bit in the background. And presumably at the election, Blair and Major will face each other in posing pouches. But Major took off his jacket to reveal that he has the sunken chest and skinny arms of a Liberal, in fact. Mulroney circled needlessly in the background, looking like a sort of bar manager, rolling his sleeves. And no, it wasn't really clear what he was doing. I think he was fielding the questions. They didn't really address this on the news. He just sort of grinned inanely at the camera like somebody who stands behind a politician that's being interviewed. And Major, wearing a rather unpleasant pink shirt, fielded all these very difficult and taxing questions, like, Prime Minister, how are you going to vote in the next election? And Prime Minister, what party's this then again? And it went on much like that, and in the end they were very pleased.
Absolutely. Prime Minister John Major, I thought I'd say that while I still can, did a stand-up question and answer session at the Bournemouth conference. He strutted about in masterful style in his shirt sleeves, and everyone there agreed they'd never seen such a lot of shirt. Mr. Major offered to take awkward questions to prove there were no plants in the audience. Plenty of vegetables, but no plants. Joanna, who won't be left destitute on the way to the asylum?
Oh, I think, is this Britain's most persistent offender, Michael Howard, whose name brings to mind the scorn, derision and humour, and that's on the lips of the Tory party. This is his bill, the asylum bill, being rebuked in the High Court this week. Because Michael Howard is basically a reptile and doesn't realise that actually you need food and water and shelter as a human being, because he can survive with none, he basically thought that the 10,000 people in Britain seeking asylum actually didn't need any help from Britain at all, and High Court proved him wrong and said, no, that's totally inhuman.
It's interesting that he has a point, though, Michael Howard, because when asylum seekers settle here, sometimes they, you know, they have children, and their children grow up and become Home Secretary. He's got a point, really.
Yes, the judge decided that Mr. Howard could not possibly have intended to condemn asylum seekers to destitution, which just goes to prove how totally out of touch the judiciary really are. Joe, welcome to the news quiz. How did signers become seekers?
Well, I assume this is to do with changing the name of unemployment benefit to job seekers allowance, as though that's going to make unemployment any better. I just think it's very strange that they've chosen the word seekers, because they were a marvellous band in the 60s, if you know them, as though it's going to actually make people seek a job. And I understand the Labour Party are going to call it the lying on the settee watching Richard and Judy allowance when they get in which case I shall be claiming it.
The new scheme also expands workfare, where people can be forced to work intolerably long hours for just £10 a week more than their benefit. This is another name change. They used to be called nurses. Alan, listen to this.
Poor oldie, there were nothing on. Face all red in a fig leaf gone. Clap hands, stamp your feet, banging on the big bass drum. What a picture, until you bum 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 bum. Speed in your family.
Do you need the question?
No. But you love it when there's a question in which everybody comes off badly and they're all losers. Is this the hoax of the week, Simon?
It is,
among a lot of other hoaxes. Wonderful. Zinn said Stuart Higgins, the public interest. The public is interested in nothing more than royals playing horsey. That they turned out not to be royals at all. And Stuart Higgins, head of the Sun, or dickhead of the Sun, whatever, bought these pictures of what were ostensibly... I can never remember how we're supposed to designate on the BBC now. They've stripped everything from her, or at least Hewitt has. She's Princess Diana of Wales or something. She's not Her Highness. But anyway, it was this woman. Anybody who had the Sun on that morning, as I do, in order to do my research for the news quiz, it looked like Lily Savage and Rowan Atkinson. It didn't look... I mean, anyone could tell that this was not... We have seen this woman's body bouncing out of the Harbour Club every week. We know that this extraordinary woman was not her. Anyway, they got a couple of lookalikes and claimed it was Highgrove, and they went through his little sash window in a house in Wandsworth and said, yes, that's Highgrove, they're very good at the Sun. And there they were, riding one another across the sofa. And it turned out that it wasn't them at all. It was just these lookalikes, or rather look not alike at all, as far as I can see.
Can and I just say I auditioned for that job? And I got on the bloke and broke his back, so...
This was the amazing secret film of the Princess of Wales stripping off for a sexy romp at Highgrove. The picture was very shaky, but it is difficult to hold the camera steady with only one hand. The Sun's furious editor, Stuart Higgins, admitted he'd been duped by a cunning stunt. At least that's what we think he said. And at the end of round one, the scores are, everybody, 4 points. Jeremy, whose adopted stance was ruled out of bounds?
This is the adopted lad, Laurie Briggs. This is an appalling, horrible story, actually. This lad, Laurie Briggs, was in a golf competition with his mum, and somebody decided to point out that he was adopted, phoned up the club secretary of the golf club. The somebody that phoned, I suggest, ought to check the true identity of his own father, because I wouldn't be too confident about that if I were him. And he reported that this lad was adopted and therefore wasn't eligible to take part. And presumably this must have been somebody who was in the competition and wanted to knock out all the opposition. So he must have got a list of all the other players and got on the phone and said, what about Jews? Yeah, no, they're allowed, I'm afraid. Now, what about Asians? Yeah, they're allowed. Women? Can we? No, women are allowed. Women are... Left-handed people? No, left-handed people. People with freckles? No. What about adopted people? Hang on a moment. No, we can help you there. Yeah, we can kick out the adopted.
Burhill Golf Club in Surrey tried to ban a boy from a family event because he was adopted. 13-year-old Laurie Briggs was already kitted out in his green check trousers and Pringles sweater when the news came through. I've been made to look a fool, he said, and now they want to ban me as well. Joanna, why will there soon be two dog collars at every church?
Oh, this is the story about that if you want to go down to the vicar now and see him about anything in particular... and you ring on the door, he'll answer the door with an Alsatian on a sort of choker chain and be sort of pulling it back like this, because the Church of England have had a conference this week called Casual Callers. Only the Church of England could have a conference called Casual Callers. And they've decided that vicars should have Rottweilers called Tozer and Tizer and Zoggy and Rover to scare off people who are coming to see them.
The story referred to the news that many vicars may soon be given guard dogs, part of a coordinated plan to protect the clergy from sex-mad divorcees. At a meeting in Gloucestershire, a number of security measures were debated, including bars on windows, bolted doors and barbed wire. Anything at all to stop the congregation sneaking out early. So, 2 points to Joanna. Joe, a piece of music for you.
Hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me fantastique. Hit me, hit me, hit me. Hit me with your rhythm stick. It's nice to be a lunatic. Hit me, hit me, hit me.
Joe, why should children be punished harshly, relatively speaking?
Oh, I know, yeah. This is Mick Heseltine's mum, isn't it? She, I just think Mick suits him better. Mick Heseltine. Well, apparently, she's about 400 years old, and some woman that lives near her got hit on the head by a stone thrown by some kids from a local council estate. And she's a rather horrible thing to do. And she said after this incident that children like this should be soundly thrashed, whereas everyone else thought her son should be soundly thrashed. So there you go. So it was that story. Am I right?
Mm, you're right. She did actually say, they said, did you ever hit Michael? Did you know? And she said that she never felt the need to give him a slap, and she must be the only person in the country. Here's one from the miners, Michael.
Michael Heseltine's mother, Eileen, called for young thugs to be given a sound thrashing, a sentiment which received a warm welcome from the Tory conference, where they appreciate an older woman being very strict. Michael Heseltine wouldn't comment on his mother's claim that children had no respect for their superiors. He explained he had to dash off to speak to that blithering idiot major. Alan, who will soon be honoured for child's play?
Well, this is another one, wonderful song by Botty, isn't it? It's the radiant Bottomley, who should have been slapped by her mother, only to bring the roses to her little cheeks and excite Major. You see, Major was kissed by Thatcher. Mm. Nightmare, it's like on Murta, isn't it? It's like having Don Corleone come slap one on. Anyway, Bottomley, given that there is very little else for the children of Britain to look forward to, but she knows that you can always gather people into the Tory party by giving them gongs that come up with the milk, decided to award junior OBEs. But I didn't actually spot what it was for. I don't know what the children have to do except just not stone Mrs. Heseltine. Here is your not stone Mrs. Heseltine military medal. But if they're good little children, they won't get education, they won't get food, they will just get these medals.
Perhaps we could nominate some, and I would nominate Pixie, Trixabelle, and all those funny little children that belong to the Geldofs for simply coping with their parents.
Ellen's absolutely right. Yes, the government plans to give OBE-style awards to children for special achievements, such as giving all their pocket money to Tory party funds. Young people will be given the awards for achievements such as visiting the elderly on a regular basis, though it's hoped in future they'll leave the video and pension book behind. And at the end of round two, the scores are everybody 8 points. We start round three with a cutting from USA Today.
Police in New Jersey said that Paul Stiller and his wife Bonnie were lucky to be only slightly injured when they lit a stick of dynamite in their car and tried to toss it out, but forgot to open the window.
Thanks to everyone who sent that in. Jeremy, who fared badly when he dared to win his bride?
Oh, this is a rather sad tale of the South Wales woman who married a minicab driver because he told her that he was in the SAS. And I'd be married to a minicab driver than somebody in the SAS, frankly. But she believed him. He said he was in the SAS, and she believed him. Now, most of us take the claims of minicab drivers with a pinch of salt, really, because you're used to some wild claims. You sit in the cab and he says things like, because I don't have to do this, you see. It's my brother's company. I'm just helping out. I'm actually one of the Beatles, I am, you see. Yeah. And you just humour them and say, oh, you must get very tired. I just got back from Hamburg. Must be tired. But you get worried when they start saying that they're in the SAS. And they say, I can kill a man with my bare hands, you see. And you say, can you just drop me off here, actually? This will be if I can run from here, that'll be fine. And she believed this. And he went through this elaborate thing for ages, trying to convince her. He bought a uniform, he got mates to pretend they were in the SAS, he showed her how to shoot somebody in the back of the head when they're lying face down on the ground. But he was found out in the end because he couldn't get a crappy book published about being in the SAS. And that's how she realised that he was. And then he's in prison now. I don't know why, for impersonating an officer when in charge of a vehicle or something. But they, why did they put him in prison? Does anyone know?
Charity.
Charity.
He ran away with funds. He said, went round to people with a tin collecting for the SAS. and they didn't get it, so they put him in chokey.
There was another interview with the wife as well, saying that she wasn't quite sure who to believe, because maybe he really was a member of the SAS and he'd been put away by an even more elite force, those sinister forces at work.
Coming.
Didn't they go wandering around Tehran pretending to be minicab drivers? Joanna, listen to this piece of music. Who wants to see the full picture?
This is the story about Canaletto, isn't it? This is an amazing story that in Blickling Hall in Norfolk, they have this wonderful Canaletto, which they then discovered was in fact only half the picture, and that it was commissioned, obviously when Canaletto was alive in the 1700s, and unfortunately in those days there were no Andrew Lloyd Webbers. There were only musicians like Mozart and Vivaldi. So no one actually had the money to buy the painting, so he cut it in two, and miraculously the other half has ended up in the National Museum of Cuba. So the man at the National Trust who runs Blickling Hall has been in touch with Cuba, has sent letters saying, can we have the other half of the picture back so we can make one really, really big picture? And he's offering to pay £1 million, but that seems quite odd to me, because 3 years ago, I think it was 3 years ago, Andrew Lloyd Webber actually bought a Canaletto for £10 million. So if I were President Castro and I were listening to this broadcast, and I hear he's a great fan of Simon's in particular, I would...
Far too right-wing for this show.
I would say, hold on a minute, we're being undercharged, and I would demand at least £5 million.
What else has Castro got? I mean, has he got De Milo's arms over there? The fourth grace.
The Canaletto was cut in half in the 1760s to make it more saleable. One piece remained in England, the other ended up in Cuba. It's a landscape study across the river towards Chelsea, and it doesn't show the football team because Canaletto didn't paint still life. 2 points to Joanna. Joe, who were over the moon after a game of no halves?
Oi, stop heckling. You just told me the answer, but I did know, actually, because I did see this on the news, and it was featured very heavily in Big Cakes Weekly this week. The Scotland team were supposed to play Estonia, but they changed the time of the match because they weren't happy with the floodlights. And Scotland arrived for the game in the afternoon, and Estonia, and I sympathise fully with them, didn't come because they were eating. Well done, Estonia. So Scotland kicked off. They blew the whistle after about 2 seconds, and all the Scots went mad because it's probably the first match they've won for a long time.
It was a touch and go for 2 seconds, right?
I think a couple of worms got one in.
The dispute surrounded the inadequate electric floodlighting of the pitch. The Estonians wanted 50 pence from the Scots to put in the meter. How innocent these new emerging nations are, trying to get 50 pence from only 11 Scotsmen. Alan, why is a lean time ahead on the railways?
I thought, yes, I liked the lean. I thought it was going to be about this wonderful stuff about the Mediterranean diet being crap, and what you have to do is eat 12 English cooked breakfasts every day in order to live forever. But it isn't that kind of lean, is it?
There's no
advanced passenger transport, which is less advanced than it was when they tried to use it last time, and it fell over, and Scotsmen eating with their knives in their mouths had to have a whistle blown every time they went past a corner in case they cut their heads off. I thought we'd get in all our Scotsman jokes immediately. They're bringing it back. The British Rail, now privatised, has looked around in the attic to see what it's got that it can fob off on a dim public, and they've got these advanced passenger transport trains, which they're going to have on the London and the Glasgow and the Manchester runs for as long as they can actually stay on the track. And these things go around corners and lean, and everybody leans with them. But it doesn't matter now that it's private, it doesn't matter what the hell happens to these people, they can all fall out the window. And I think that is the story. It's the less than advanced passenger transport, something way back.
I suppose it'd be quite nice going up the west coast, peering into rock pools for to look for crabs and things, wouldn't it? Dragging your fingers in the water as you go.
You have very little knowledge of Glasgow, Jeremy.
This is the reintroduction of the tilting train, which was hailed as a breakthrough in the 1980s, but was abandoned when it made passengers sick. After extensive research, BR engineers traced the problem to the buffet car. As regions, meanwhile, couldn't understand the fuss. All trains looked tilting to them anyway. At the end of round three, the scores are, everybody, 12 points. Jeremy, some music for you.
Glasses want me, everyone. Well, let them catch me if they can. You can't kick the bricks off a Highland man. And I don't wear the trousers. Let the wind blow high, let the wind blow low. Through the streets and my kit I'll go. All the lasses say hello. Down of where she throws.
Who gave out cheques and skirted a tax demand?
This is brilliant. The there's a kilt firm in Scotland. And they make their employees wear kilts and sporrans, and the Inland Revenue says this is a perk. So bad enough that they go through the humiliation of having to wear Highland dress in their workplace, they get taxed on it as well. And I think, well, just because you work for a kilt company, should you have to go through this? I mean, people in mother care don't have to wear baby clothes and disposable nappies. And then these poor people dressed like this. And the Inland Revenue says, well, this isn't their work uniform. All Scottish people dress like this all the time. So this is just free clothing for them. Because as you know, Scottish people leave work and they run through the heather with claymores. And they all live in this village, which only appears once every 100 years.
Yes, Hector Russell Limited, a Scottish manufacturer of traditional Highland dress, was told that its workers must pay tax on the kilts, which they've been given free for the last 6 years. Free clothing is untaxed only if supplied for use at work. Kilts have been popular weekend attire in the Highlands ever since sheep started to recognise the sound of a zip. Or as the Rolling Stones so memorably sang, "Hey, MacLeod, get off of my U." So, 2 points to Jeremy. Joe, which report has been easy to swallow this week?
I don't know, is it a report made of chips or something? I don't know.
More or less, yes.
Oh, yeah, right. Sorry. That big British blowout dinners are good for you.
That's it?
So, ha-ha, I have the last laugh. There's one coming out next week saying fags are great for you as well, Alice. So we'll be all right.
They compared to the Continental with an English dinner. They had the Continental meal would be lasagna and a chunk of bread, whereas the British meal would be lasagna and chips. But actually, they tried to create this low-calorie meal that they said is a traditional meal. And it was like the Special K breakfast. It was one lean pork chop, likely left in the sun for a bit, with one raw potato and a frozen pea. That's not traditional English food. Traditional English food is 6 pints of lager and a chicken biryani, isn't it?
But I do think that people are finally starting to rebel against how skinny some people are. Because my favourite thing recently was the Omega withdrawing their advertising from Vogue because the models were so thin. So I went out and I bought an Omega watch and I couldn't get it around my wrist.
Alan, what unholy row took off on aircraft fuel and bacon?
We're not having the fruit fly question. What a pity.
No, we'll answer it anyway, the fruit fly question.
Oh, no, it's too sad. I mean, the fruit fly was a wonderful story for all of us in these enlightened times. The fruit fly is expiring because it's developed its foreplay techniques to the point where when it's finished them, this mating dance it does, it hasn't got the energy to get whatever a fruit fly has up the other fruit fly. It's on the back of the Telegraph, an excellent newspaper. This one, I like this story very much because having gone through weeks and weeks of churchmen screwing everything, including the rock vials that have been delivered, so they can eat the divorcees that might otherwise bring down the Church of England. This is a genuine church story. This is St. Mary's Wroxham, where they're very proud of their choir, which sings, I mean, since God is dead, the only thing left is decent old songs, and that's perfectly all right. But they've got new songs, which are about, or new hymns, which are about planes refueling in the air. I'm not quite sure how spiritual that is, but anyway, the choir does want to sing it. And so the choir's gone home, and they've locked up the organ and taken the key with them. And there is simply this rather trendy cleric that I saw on television in fetching grey stuff, and his hair is bouffant, saying there's nothing wrong with the modern church. We ought to be able to sing all these songs, and I don't like my congregation much. That's not why I'm here, to please these awful people. And we should carry on singing these songs, even though there's only two of us left to sing. And there's him and a girl, and they sit there in this empty crypt, singing these dreadful songs. Well, everybody else in the choir has gone to the other end of the village and singing all things bright and beautiful. Which is good. I approve of that.
It doesn't really work, all this modernisation of a religious text, does it? Because you end up with commandments that say things like customers are kindly requested to refrain from coveting.
So before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Jeremy.
This is from the Memphis Flyer, and it says Wesley Steeney, 16, and Janice Katie, 18, were arrested for robbing a food spot store in Miami in February after they reported to a hospital with gunshot wounds. According to police, Katie had reached over the store's counter for the money and accidentally discharged his gun, hitting Steeney, who then fell against a third robber, causing his gun to discharge and hit Katie. The three then fled, said the food spot clerk. I knew there was a mistake. They were the only ones bleeding.
Joanna.
Well, this is from the Enfield Advertiser, and it's a correction, and it reads, the Advertiser published a story in our September the 11th issue about plastic owls in Broxburn. In our photo caption, we stated that Councillor Don Poole, the chairman of the council's public services committee, was holding one of the owls. He was, in fact, holding the leader of the council, Don Smith.
Joe.
This is from Retail Week, which I can assure you I read absolutely rabidly every week. Condom sales from petrol stations are high, according to Dave Strutt, sector controller of Durex. Suitably placed condoms, for example, next to a rack of Kit Kats by the till, means that sales of both items go up. One product can cover the other. But I just thought, you know, if someone comes home, if your bloke comes home with some condoms and a Kit Kat, you're not going to want sex, are you? No.
Alan.
Well, I'd like to lower the tone of the cuttings even further with a brief but, I think, resonant cutting from the Newcastle Evening Chronicle. It says, the high point of the afternoon came when Les Ferdinand scored with an absolutely beautiful goat.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores, which are... deservedly, everybody, 16 points. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the financial advisor sent in by Mr. R. Cunningham of Fife.
For less than £2 a week, Simon Burgess will insure against the possibility of a virgin birth. Virgins are genuinely concerned with the approach of the second millennium, he said. His first policyholder is a Mrs. Catherine Murphy, whose previous claim to fame was stripping naked in a London street to promote insurance for prostitutes. Mr. Burgess reliably informs us that Mrs. Murphy is a virgin who is genuinely worried about bringing an unexpected messiah into the world. She simply wants enough money to cover school fees, he said.
With that, goodbye.
taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Jeremy Hardy, Joanna Coles and Joe Brand. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft and Adam Bostock-Smith. And the producer was Aled Evans.